Now let's quickly talk about the development side. You have said that triggers, can you tell me what is trigger and what are the types of trigger?
Okay, so trigger is like a way of automating different processes in Salesforce, and they are written in Apex language, and they can be of different types, like before, after. So basically, trigger is something like we are triggering the Apex code on some condition. So if there's Apex trigger
And
which is
some
defined,
conditions or some events.
some event. Sorry, some event.
Okay.
Some event. So event can be insert, update, and delete, and also undelete. And it can be before and after. So that way, total there are seven scenarios for each trigger, and it is recommended that there should be one trigger per object, and all we should create trigger keeping in mind the governor limits of Salesforce.
Okay. So what are the types of trigger?
There can be seven total
No,
context
no, those are context variable. I'm talking about types.
before and after. After,
Okay, when you will use after and before, like when you will use after trigger.
if I talk about after insert, so whenever we require
No, no,
the
no.
ID.
You are talking about a particular context. I'm saying that when you will use after event and when you will use before event in general terms.
Okay. In general terms, if we want to do something before of some event, like before inserting, we want that email field of contact should be updated with some XYZ value. Then it will be done in before. And suppose we want to do something after particular event, then it will be done in after triggers.
No, that is like you are saying that if I wanted to use this answer is like partner community is used for partners and customer community is used for customers, right? I'm saying that how you will decide. Suppose that let me give you an example here. I wanted to update an account field, the description field, whenever that account is created. Which event you will use here?
Before.
Okay, how you had decided like before you will use?
So I took the scenario and I understood it, and as it is updating the same record in which it is there. So we will have to use the before only.
Okay, you say here you said like it is updating the same record, and we don't need to do the DML again to update the same record. That's right. Now let me give you another scenario here. I wanted to update the account field description, okay, based on the parent account description. Like whatever the description field is there on the parent account, it should be the value should be there on the child account as well, the same value. Which trigger event you will use here, before or after?
So it is the same account object only, and parent is also account, right?
Yeah.
It's a self relationship.
So basically, what you need to do is whenever a new account is created, you need to copy the description from the parent account to the child account.
This can also be done in before only.
And how you will do this?
So whenever the we will writing the before insert trigger, or we want before update also.
No, just before
Okay,
insert.
before insert. So it before insert, and there will be a field for account ID, parent account ID on that record. We will be creating a list of all the account IDs where we have to bulkify the code, and then we will query all the parent accounts, and we will iterate the parent accounts and the trigger dot new and match the account IDs, like account ID of the so the parent account of the insert from the trigger dot new in parent account. And the parent account list ID will be matching, and from that we can fetch the description of parent account and put it into trigger.new.
Okay, cool. Now there is one scenario. I have to develop a roll-up summary trigger whenever a contact is created under an account, created or updated or deleted, undeleted. Anything is happening on contact record. I wanted to update the related account. Which trigger scenario you will use here?
We will be requiring, if you want to create roll-up summary, we will require after insert, after update, and after delete, and after and delete.
Now the question is why after?
Why after? Because we actually want to be sure that the event has happened.
Okay, but even if I do this using before, that will also work.
If you are thinking about the error,
if there is any error you wanted to roll back, then the error will roll back in both the cases, either before or after event.
Yeah. I'm not sure about the answer.
Okay, so basically the previous two scenarios were easy and then you were able to pick the before, and then this time you're not able to find like either before and after, right? So basically you're right, it should be always an after. You're also right, we wanted to make sure that the event has happened, the entry has been made to the passbook. Okay, whatever the entry you are trying to make into the table, that has been made. Then you wanted to count. And now the question for why after, because the reason is that in case of before, there might be some other operations which are running on the same records, like some external integration, some external APIs. You might have some other processes running on, like process builder flows. Then you probably might get into the error called that is record lock, unable to lock row.
Okay.
So basically, that's why when you go to the after insert, you have to do the query. You have your own records. Now, as you have your own records, you're not working on the same record or the same process which the other processes are also working on.
Okay, I got it.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So can I make a call out from an Apex trigger?
No, you have to call it from different. You can't make call out.
Suppose that I have a requirement. I have to do that. How can I do that?
Pardon? So,
suppose that my customer is saying that I have to use an Apex trigger and then I have to make the call out.
Okay, so you have to use it in a future method. So you'll be calling the future method from the Apex code, from the Apex trigger.
What are the properties of a future method?
So future method, they are executed asynchronously. So basically this is the main feature of a future method, that they are executed asynchronously, means the code will not wait for the future code response and it will move ahead.
Okay, so can I return something from a future method?
No, it has to be void.
Why can't it return anything?
Yeah, because as I said, it is the asynchronous method, so it will execute asynchronously, and if we have a return type, then the code will have to stop for the response, which is not in case of the future method. So code will execute ahead and future method will be executed in parallel with our Apex code.
Parallel?
Parallel means it will not be executed in flow of our code. It will be executed differently than our Apex code. By parallel, like
before or after?
It can be with or after. Means it is not decided that it will be when it will be running.
Okay, cool. So what are the difference between future queueable and batch Apex?
Okay, so batch Apex, it is like for bulk update or bulk insert type. And future is like generally used for like callouts. And queueable means like
when you will use future and when you will use batch, when you will use queueable.
Okay, so future, like if you want to do some callout from Apex trigger, then we use future.
Can't I use queueable here in place of future?
We can use.
Okay, then what's the use of future now?
Actually, queueable, it takes one record per time, actually.
Queueable takes one record and future more than one?
Oh, actually, I'm confused a bit. Future, it doesn't take list of records.
But it can take IDs, right? Set of IDs.
I'm not sure about this question.
Okay. So basically, future is not only for making the caller from the trigger. Future can also used to avoid the error called mixed DML operation.
Yes, yes.
Okay. When we talk about future, it is mainly for the less number of records, like one or two records you are processing at a time. When we talk about queueable, queueable is mainly used for, as its name indicates, for kind of making a chain. When you wanted to decide like this process should be executed after this and then after this, okay, you can make a chain, and then you can also monitor the record using queueable. And when we talk about batch, as you said that this is the bulkification where you have to process the millions or billions of record, then you can use batch effects.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are the limitations of future and how these limitations are getting resolved by queueable effects?
In future, we cannot change the processes because the order is not decided which future method will be running when.
Mm-hmm.
And in queueable, we can decide that order of execution, like you told about the chain.
Okay. Any other problem that you have? Okay. So basically, it is future has three problems, which is resolved by queueable. Number one is we cannot pass S object inside future methods. Okay. Okay. And then number two is we cannot chain. And number three is that we cannot monitor future.
Monitor. Okay. Yeah. Monitoring.
Okay. So okay. These are the three things. So there is one like code I have written, which is making a call out, and that code is working fine when I am making a call, like I'm executing the code from the anonymous window. Okay.
Okay.
And that code is not working when I'm putting the same code inside the execute method of my batch apex. What could be the issue?
We have to use @allow callout in batch class, then it will allow to execute the
what we need to use
annotation for allow callout in batch.
Is there any annotation for batch apex to allow the callouts?
Yeah.
No, we don't have.
In batch, we can callouts we can do in batches also.
We can do that, but we don't have any annotation.
Annotation not. We have to implement the interface. Implement allow callout.
Okay. That is database.allowsCallout.
Yeah, database.allowCallout. It implements.
Okay. What are the different interfaces you have used in batch apex?
One is this only, like database.allowCallout and database.batchable. Because it is a batch class.
Okay. Any other interface you have used?
On these two only.
Okay. Have you used database.stateful?
Oh, yeah. I have used, means I have just used it from trailhead, not in practical, in some project. Means I know the reason of stateful.
Okay.
So database.stateful, I can tell that if you want to monitor the batch class execution, you can use database.stateful. So the state will be maintained.
State for which? The trigger, the batch?
No, batch.
Your state Salesforce. The batch state or the variables?
We want to count the number of records that are being inserted.
That's okay. My question is the state of batch, variables, or the class, what store?
Variables.
Okay. So you're right. The database.stateful is mainly used for maintaining the state of the variable across the methods, basically. Yeah. How many callouts can I make using apex, basically batch apex?
100.
100 from a batch apex or from every method?
From batch apex, like each chunk should have size of 100 if you are executing a callout for in batch apex.
Okay. And how many callouts can I make from a simple Apex?
Some simple Apex. I think it's 50, but I'm not sure about the number.
Okay. So basically, it's handed in simple Apex, simple transaction. And when it comes to batch Apex, then it becomes handed from each methods. And
okay,
when
so it is 100 both the times.
Yeah, it is 100. But when we talk about execute method, it takes 100 for each chunk.
Okay, yeah, 100 for each chunk.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So what kind of integration you have implemented?
So I had a custom object named city, in which there was a temperature field. And like my client had around more than 1,000 records of this object, and they wanted to update the temperature every day at 7 p.m. EST. And there was a weather API from which I got the data of weather every day.
Okay, what was the API like? Either it was REST or SOAP?
REST.
How did you know that it is a REST?
Actually, I got through their documentation, and they had different methods like get, put, post, and delete. So from that, yeah, I was able to.
These are methods are there in SOAP as well.
Actually, like there was a documentation of that API. So that was like REST. So
okay. So basically, to identify the API is REST or not. Okay. So okay. If your API is accepting any format other than XML, then it is a REST API. Okay.
Okay.
And if your API is only accepting XML, then it's a SOAP API.
SOAP, okay, XML.
What was the authentication of the API?
It was access token based.
Okay. How did you get the access token?
So like there was like the API was already made, and we had to register, and on email I got the access token, and that access token I had to use with that API.
Okay. Have you worked on Auth2 integration?
Yeah, I have worked with Auth2 while integrating Google.
How does Auth2 works?
So for Auth2, I actually used the name credential in Salesforce. And like Auth2 works like if we enter the credential and
is it one step or two step verification? User interference is required.
One time it's required initially.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we get a token, then it is not required. So like I had to create an app in Google account, and mm-hmm. I got the security token and ID, and that I used in name credential and authenticator, I think. Yeah.
Auth provider,
yeah. Auth provider and name credential. And using that, it was done once. So I had to enter the ID and password and that ID and token once. And then I got the auth token and it was like authenticated. Then I was able to call the Google APIs using that auth provider in Apex.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are the benefits of name credentials?
Name credential, we can store the username password without exposing them.
Okay, any other benefit?
Name credential, that's it.
Okay, so basically it does take care of all the remote chat settings and all.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What is the use of a state parameter in Auth 2.0?
Which parameter?
State.
I don't know.
Okay. So basically state parameter is used to make our API call more secure so that we can prevent our request call from the intruders while getting the access token.
Okay.
So what we do is we send a state parameter to the authorization server, and then authorization server returns the same state parameter to us. So if the state has been modified in between, that means the my request has been compromised. If the state is same, that means the request is safe.
Okay. Yeah.
So that is about from the integration part. And now we have Rohit with us. He'll be asking the questions on JavaScript and Aura part. Rohit, you are on.
Hey, Anirudh.
Yeah, hi, Rohit.
How are you doing? I'll go ahead. So do you, can you tell me a little about, so you have experience with Aura, or does it also include LWC or just purely Aura?
No, actually, I have just experience on Aura component and LWC. I only know the basic, so very basic only. Means I have created a Hello World Lightning Web component and I have connected my org and everything.
Okay.
But I am not expertise in LWC.
Okay, but then you would at least know about the JavaScript, right? Considering in Aura we are writing the JavaScript.
Okay. Yes, yeah.
Okay, I'll start with very basic questions. Can you tell me what is the purpose of helper file? I mean, like when we create an Aura component, right? There is a controller.js and then there is also a helper.js, right? What's the use of helper.js?
Okay, so helper.js is like used for usability of our code. If we are using our Aura component in some other component, then we can use the code from our helper in that component also. And from controller, we cannot use that code in different Aura component.
Can you tell me, let's assume that you have a method with Aura enabled and cacheable is true, right?
No.
And I am doing, a DML in this method. Would I get any error, or would it be just like I will be able to do it? So let's assume the method is public static void update account, and I'm passing, ID of the account. And what I'm doing is I'm just querying it and changing the name of it. And then I'm just doing update account. And the method is annotated with @enabled, cacheable is true. And I'm calling it from my helper.
In case of only Aura enabled, there will be no issue.
Okay.
While doing this, I'm not sure about the cacheable equal to true thing.
So
I haven't worked a lot with the cacheable part.
Okay. Can you tell me what type of events do we have in Aura, and what is their purpose, and like when do I use which one?
Event like application event,
okay,
and component events, right? That you are asking.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so application event means it will be executed for all the components present inside an application, and component it will be only particular to the component which is directly linked to that component.
Okay, can you elaborate a little on this?
Okay, so in application, it will be passed for all the components that are part of the framework, actually.
Okay.
And in component, there will be like specifically only to one component. So suppose there is a parent and child. So if event is there in child, then it will be only limited to its own parent only.
Okay. I'll give you two scenarios. Can you tell me what you would use? So you have a parent A, and then you have a parent A is a component, and then you have two components under it, child B and child C. Okay. How would I communicate between child B and child C? Like if I want to send some data from.
In this case, we have to use application event.
Okay.
Anything occurring in any of the child B or child C, it will be across all the components of that application.
Okay. Do you know how can a parent call a function or set an attribute value on a child? Can a parent do that on a child?
Yeah, we can do it. So we can do using when we are calling the component, we can pass the attribute value also of that component.
Okay.
From the parent. Also, we can use Aura method.
Okay. So do you think rather than firing an application event from B to C, I could have gone with the route of firing a component event from B to A and then parent setting up the attribute or maybe a method on to the different child C? Would that work?
V2A. Yes, that can work, but it will be a long process, I think. So it's not recommended. But it can work.
Okay. The other thing is, what if, so we had parent and then we had child B and child C, right?
Yes.
What if I also have a grandparent? Okay. I'm like a parent of a parent A.
Okay.
And now child B wants to communicate to the grandparent. How would I do that?
Child B to child, sorry, grandparent, right?
Child to a grandparent. How would I do a communication?
I think in this case, we can use the component event in this also.
Okay, how would I do that?
Because like component will be traced to the top of the tree, if you consider it as a tree. So we can use component event here also.
Okay, so you are saying it would bubble up.
Bubble and capture, two are there. And capture it is... it will bubble, yeah.
Okay, and
yes.
What happens in that capture phase?
So in capture, what happens is, suppose the hierarchy is D is the grandparent and A is the parent and B and C are child. In capture, from B child, it will directly go to the parent, topmost parent, then it will flow downwards.
Okay.
And in capture, it will be like B to A and then A to D. So from B to parent and parent to grandparent.
Thank you. Okay, let's move a little to the JavaScript. Do you know what are callback functions?
Yeah.
You can explain me a little.
So callback is like we do to call the server method from our Aura component. It is also a type of callback only. So our code will stop there till the response we get from the server. So the code will be stopped. So it can be considered as a callback function only. That means code execution will be stopped till we get the response.
So that's okay. Can you elaborate on what are callback functions in JavaScript? I didn't get it, I think.
Okay, so like if we want to call a apex method from a Aura component,
okay,
from our helper, suppose we are calling a apex method, so we will make use of callback function. So what happens in callback, the function will be, the apex method will be called and our code execution will stop till the response is gathered from the server. So for the Aura component, the server is the apex class. So when the response will come from the apex, then the code execution will move ahead. So it is example of a callback function.
Okay. Do you also know what are promises?
Yeah, I know about promises, but only theory knowledge.
Okay, can you tell me?
So promise is like a advanced version of callback feature.
Okay.
So in promise, there is like a there are two terms exactly, I'm not remembering it currently. So promise can have two responses, two types of responses. One is for the success and one for the failure, and it waits till the response is achieved.
Okay.
I have not used promise, but I have used async await.
Okay.
So it's more advanced version of promise.
Okay. But I want to go back a little. So like you said, callback you used to call an apex and it was an asynchronous call. So does that mean callback is also an asynchronous function and promise is also for asynchronous?
No, and no. Actually, callback is for synchronous functional.
Okay. So even if I call a callback function from an asynchronous method like set timeout, would it still be synchronous?
I'm not sure about this.
Okay. So callbacks, I'll tell you a little about it, considering this is very important. So callback functions are nothing. These are the functions that are being passed as a parameter into another functions. And callback themselves are not neither synchronous nor asynchronous. It depends on where they are being passed. For example, if you're passing them into a, say, an array function, say a splice or some other array function, then they are acting as a synchronous function, as because as soon as it's running, it's going to give you the answer. But if it gets passed into an asynchronous function like set timeout, then they will act like an asynchronous because the function that they are being passed into as a parameter are asynchronous in themselves.
Okay. So the the callback which we use in the helper and which we call the server-side controller, it is synchronous.
What do you think?
According to me, it's synchronous, and that for that reason I told about synchronous. Because the code waits for the response.
So as I said, it depends on the function that is being passed into. So that's there lies the answer. They themselves are not neither synchronous or asynchronous. We cannot call them that way.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So in the meantime, what is the difference between application event and component event?
Yeah. So the application event, as I told, like it is for the complete application, and component, it is for its own side of the tree. If we consider the complete component structure as a tree.
Mm-hmm. So how you will consider which component event you need to use?
If you want to converse between two childs of same level, we will be using application event in that case. And if you want to pass data only to the parent, then we will use the component event.
Okay, so basically I'm going to give you a scenario here. Suppose that just consider the same scenario which you got from Rohit. Okay. And in case of suppose that I have two components which are related with each other using parent child. Okay. Now here I wanted to use application event. Is there anything which is preventing me to use application event instead of parent? I'm sorry, instead of component event?
So component event are considered as compared to application.
I'm saying that I wanted to use application event. Is there anything which is preventing me to use application event even if the components are related with each other?
No, you can use.
Okay, then why we should, why Salesforce has given us two options? They should have given us only application event.
I think the component event are faster enough than application event. Maybe that's the case. I'm not sure about this, but.
Okay. So basically, there are two things. One, you already said these are faster. The other thing is that security. When we use application event, okay, most of the components are listening. There might be 1,000 number of components who are listening to the same event. And if I'm sending a sensitive data, the security can be breached.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
So
yes,
the security is the key consideration, and then the other part is performance.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, Rohit, you go ahead.
Okay. I'll move on to a little bit of LWC, and like you said, you know some basics of it. So let's see. Can you tell me what decorators are there in LWC?
Decorators are @API and @track.
Okay. And do you know what's the difference?
Actually, don't know about them a lot.
Okay.
What I have studied, I think it API, API used for two-way binding of the variable which we declare, means the change in JavaScript code, it is reflected directly on the component side, the HTML side, using @API.
Okay.
And @track, that I don't remember. Okay. Because I just used them once only.
Okay, I'll tell you. So @track is to make, so the two-way binding, that's not correct. @track is to make a property reactive, but the property is private. That is, as soon as the property changes, it will re-render your UI. But
recently, at the track, right?
Yes, but recently what Salesforce has done is at the track is no more required if you are making a primitive data type. Unless you go for, say, an array or an object, you need to use the at the track. Otherwise, all the properties are by default reactive now.
Okay. And at the API?
At the API is for to make, to expose your property as a public property so that a parent can come or can set an attribute on a child or can call a function directly of a child. So it's to publicly expose it.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Can you... I'm thinking what else I can ask you. And so anything, okay, do you know anything else in LWC which I could ask or?
In LWC, like I have just actually set up the VS code.
Okay,
means so the only the basic module which is there for LWC, the Hello World one.
Okay, so that's fine. We'll not go to LWC then. Can you tell me how would I fire an application event?
So we have to create an event.
Okay, that's
from true. Like if we are in the developer console, file new lightning resource, and from there the we will no from new and we will create the event, and from there we can choose the event type.
Okay, and how would I now use it?
Suppose we are firing the application event, then from where you are firing, you will have to register that event, and where you want the data of that event, you have to use handler of that event.
Okay. Do I need to register an application event?
Yes, you have to register it.
And how do I fire an application event?
So we can fire it from controller.
Okay, how do I do that?
So suppose like we have registered the event inside a component. And suppose we are having a button, and on click of button, a function is called. And inside the function, we can call the event. And wherever we will be handling the event, it will carry the parameters and all with that event file itself. Event data object, you can say.
So what I'm trying to ask is how would you fire an event? So like you said, I will have a button. On a click of it, I'll say, okay, fire this function from a helper class. Yes. Now you are on that function. How would you fire this application event, and how would you set parameters on that?
So we will get the we write the code like we are having the component. So component dot get and evt dot whatever is the name.
Is it component dot get for application event as well?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think it's dollar a dot get e dot c colon? Okay.
I'm not remembering the syntax exactly, but yes, I have used it.
Okay. Can you tell me what is this dollar a that we use, like NQ action, and like how I said it's also used for application events. What is this dollar a?
That I don't know, but I've just used it directly. Can I know?
So dollar a is to access the underlying Aura framework. I'm like all these actions, like ongoing actions, getting application events. That's how we use dollar a. So it's like that they have given us how we can access their underlying framework. That's why we use it, and that's the utility around dollar a.
Okay, so like all the things of Aura can be used using dollar a, somewhat like that, right?
Not necessarily, and that doesn't mean that. So I'm like, when you say all the things, what do you mean by all the things?
Means like the action or the event.
So events we already do, because the application events are from the framework. So that's why we do it. Components events are related to your component. That's why I'm doing component.get. Enqueuing action is also, again, that's when I call my Apex classes, I have to enqueue all of them, right? That's again at the framework level. That's why I'm doing $a.enqueue.
Yes.
Okay, so I Amit, I think we are pretty much done. You have asked configuration, Apex, async, and lightning is also done. I think we are good to wrap it up.